ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, B-Mac behind the glass. It is a Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Blankers is back. We missed you, Blankers.
I missed you
Cole
guys.
Did a good job.
I've never worked so hard in my life.
Yesterday?
I have worked, Jeremy, 10 times harder than I ever would have worked if we were doing a Monday edition to the Killer Bees. Those
Why?
Two girls from...
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Sun up until bedtime last night had me through the ringer. We covered much ground, did so many things, and then they kept, well, what are we doing next? I'm like, what are we doing next? Haven't we done enough for a week? I was all over the place.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got to spend a whole lot of time together. We should, B-Mac should pull Cole's, up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He tried.
It was the worst.
It was worse than yours?
I've ever heard. Mine was good.
No, it was not.
Hush your mouth. Even if you think mine was not good,
Which I don't.
His was the worst of all time. B-Mac's got to pull it and play it for you a little bit later in the show, because it was horrendous. It was terrible. I'm not sure I wanted to do the next 2 hours and 59 minutes with him. It was so bad.
He has a lot of effort. I'll give him that. He puts a lot of effort into what he does.
We had a good show together, but his "Hey, what up, H-Town?" or "What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?" was quite literally the worst ever. It was
he did
worse
say
than
your
Tom
name
Ray's
right, right?
I don't know. I wasn't paying that close of attention.
Well, then you were in regular normal mode. You were comfortable.
Okay, we got it. We want to play it.
Yeah, let me hear it.
Oh, you have it? Yeah. Let's play. Here was Cole's "What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?" in place of Joel Blank yesterday.
How we doing?
Oh, man. Oh, my goodness.
I told you mine was better. You didn't believe me.
You're actually right.
Wrong.
You're not right often, but you're right there. Wow.
Yeah, it was brutal. Even if you don't think mine was good, it was better than that. That was quite literally the worst.
I kind of got to agree with you.
Hey, how we doing of all time. Yeah. I don't think it's up for debate. It's not an opinion. It's a fact.
Okay.
Anyways, Tom Brady played lousy yesterday.
Yep.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers played lousy yesterday. More impressive performance. Was it more impressive for the Cowboys or more depressing for the Bucs?
I think it's depressing for the Bucs because they know it's over. They know that regardless of it, whether he plays or not, I don't think he's going to play another down for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, it's like the old Florida Marlins teams where you load up and you do everything you possibly can while you have that small window of opportunity. They capitalized on it. They got a Super Bowl. And then they realized when he made sure the stipulations of the contract said you can't franchise him, you're not going to be able to get right of first refusal. He can just walk. There's no tendering anything. If he wants to go, he can go. If he wants to stay, he can stay. And if he plays anywhere next year, it's going to be another team ready to win right away. The Raiders and the Niners would be the two obvious teams for a lot of obvious reasons. But he's not. His last game has been played with the Buccaneers. It just remains to be seen if his last game has been played in the NFL. That interception in the first half when they were still in the ball game, where I don't know he wasn't. If someone said tried to cover for him, saying he was trying to throw it away, no, he put some touch on that ball. He just put some touch right to a defender with no one around. Going, what are you doing? That's so not Tom Brady.
Yeah, he looked. He didn't look good. I think you're right. I think it's the end of Tampa Bay. I don't think it's the end of Brady. We'll talk about potential teams a little bit later, but I think Brady plays again next year. I didn't leave that game yesterday with the feeling that Tom Brady was done. I still think we see him next season. Now, where he goes, I think all of a sudden is in question, because I think there's a couple of teams that we thought was a potential spot for Tom Brady next year that I don't think would be interested in Tom Brady next year.
He's a bridge quarterback for the Raiders for sure. And they have everything that he needs in order to be successful. Assuming Josh Jacobs, they find a way to really have to overpay to make up for passing on his fifth-year option and then him having the year he had. If you get Jacobs back and you have one of the top tight ends in Waller, you have a great slot receiver, you have who's your favorite, you have one of the best wide receiver ones in football, That's a and a decent offensive line. That's enough for Tom Brady to come back, and they're all younger than what he had in Tampa Bay. They're not the overweight playoff Lenny trying to self-proclaim Leonard Fournette. They're not Julio Jones, who looks like a shell of himself, and all the other guys. They're truly in their prime as players, and so they're going. Devontae Adams just needs another quarterback, and until they can get a younger and maybe a more long-term solution, because of the fact that he's worked together with Josh McDaniels in the past, it just makes too much sense for him to not be a Raider next year.
Right. The team that I was thinking of is that eliminates San Francisco by his performance. I don't think that San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan, and they still have a playoff run if they don't win it all. I don't think what they saw yesterday from Brady, and quite frankly all season long, Brady's a far cry from who he was last year when he led the NFL in passing. I think San Francisco and Shanahan probably watching that game out of the corner of their eye, thinking that Brady's a possibility in 2023. And I don't think that they go that route with the team that they have after watching Brady all year, and then his cherry on the top was that lousy performance yesterday. I think that game yesterday ruined the chances of Tom Brady being a San Francisco 49er.
Well, I think it's a combination, Jeremy. I think that Brock Purdy has eliminated the Tom Brady conversation.
Absolutely. But
I think
even Trey Lance, too. I mean, I don't think it's a guarantee that Brock Purdy starts over Trey Lance next year.
No, it's true. But, well, I don't know that Trey Lance is going to be ready for week one. But even if he is, obviously, if Purdy keeps playing the way he's playing and they make a long run, it's going to be you're going to be hard pressed to kind of just throw him aside. So it might be a competition. They have a lot of options that maybe help save them from the fact that they have egg on their face from giving up a lot of draft capital to get a guy that hasn't really done anything since he's been there except get hurt. And now you don't know you still don't know what you have, but you have the rest of the team ready for a Super Bowl. And I think that if Purdy had struggled after Jimmy G went down, that you could say the Niners are another team that needs a short-term bridge quarterback until Lance is ready to go and you truly have confidence he's got it, he's got a grasp of everything. But now because you've got Purdy in the mix, you don't have to overpay for Tom Brady, and you don't have to worry about if he's still got anything left in the tank. So as much as I thought it was going to be two teams, and because he grew up being a Niners fan, it would be the Cinderella story and a great way to go out for Brady, it just seems like the Raiders are the only team right now, or one of the only teams that would make sense.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way it goes as well. Meanwhile, the Dallas Cowboys, an impressive win for them. I mean, going into yesterday's game, I think if you took just kind of the country's poll, right, the country's idea of who's going to win that game yesterday, it was probably pretty close to 50-50, maybe 55-45 for Dallas. And the way they won yesterday, convincing. I know it makes Cowboys fans feel good going into the next round after the win that they had. And that's going to be a fun matchup against San Francisco, because I still think that Brock Purdy is going to have a Brock Purdy moment. And it wouldn't shock me if San Francisco wins that game, or if Dallas wins that game in San Francisco. Now, one of the other storylines from yesterday's game was Brett Maher.
Yeah.
The extra points that he was missing all over the place. Missed four straight. I actually think this was a good thing for Dallas, that they were able to figure out that Maher had this in him during this game, a game that you win comfortably, a game that you win by 17 points, a game that you win going away. It was never close. It was never a sweat. It was never a worry. It's better that this reared its ugly head in a blowout win than, let's say, next week in a game that's going to go down to the wire and where a kick might determine that game. I think it's a good thing for the Cowboys that you saw this happen from Maher, and I think you have to move on. I don't think there's any other choice. I mean, I don't trust this guy kicking kicks during playoff games.
It's especially with Jerry Jones, who would be so quick to make a knee jerk, because Dak supported him, and Dak obviously coming from the same kind of experiences said, look, a week ago everybody was ready to turn their back on me and said I sucked, so I'm going to stick with him. He's had too many big kicks and done too many good things. You knew he was overcompensating after missing everything one direction. The third one he missed because he overcompensated and kicked it. And then all of a sudden, it's like a golfer with the yips. You can't even stop thinking about it to the point where you know you're going to self-destruct before you even self-destruct. It's just one of those things like, could he bounce out of it? But if you're playing in a big game, this would be one thing if it was like week three of the regular season. But when you're talking about, win or go home, and you basically gave away 3 points last night, 4 points last night, that could have made a difference in a close game. In the Manning cast, Peyton Manning was losing his flipping mind. And he's like, I don't understand why there isn't just a pool of kickers that in a moment's notice, you can go pull another one. And obviously he had bad experiences with Mike Vanderjack, the idiot liquored up kicker. but yeah, I mean, every missed kick, Peyton was losing his mind going, oh my goodness. Like this, as a player, and you saw it on Dak's face, Dak lost his mind after the third one and spiked his helmet going,
I didn't like that, by the way.
What are we doing?
I thought that was Bush League.
That was Kyler Murray-esque.
I couldn't stand that. I thought that was incredibly Bush League. And I saw somebody quote tweet that video, too, and say, was the kicker throwing his helmet when Dak Prescott was throwing interceptions all season long? I thought that was incredibly Bush League by Dak Prescott. I could not stand that.
I agree.
And
with
I can understand his frustration, but that's a frustration that you hold within. You can't show up
right.
a teammate like that.
That's why I said Kyler Murray. This is the kind of things
a great
that
call.
No matter how much you want to do something like he did for the betterment of the team and the long-term relationship, and you might need this guy next week if he indeed kicks, you can't show that outwardly. You just can't. And he did. And then for Aikman to basically have his back and go, I've been there before and done the same kind of things. Well, you shouldn't have done it either, Troy.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty Bush League of Dak. But a good win. Good win for the Dallas Cowboys. It sets up an entertaining matchup next week. It also shows us what Tampa Bay has been all year, quite frankly. Tampa Bay was not a good football team all year. They were a subpar NFL team in a lousy division, capitalized on that. I mean, they won 8 of 18 games this year. They won 8 games. They lost 10. Tampa Bay was not a good football team this year. They weren't. And Dallas took advantage of that. That's good for the Cowboys. I'm excited to watch that matchup next week between the Cowboys and the 49ers. There were some takeaways I had watching that game from a Houston Texans perspective. We'll get into that maybe a little bit later on in the show. But the big Texans news, Sean Payton has interviewed with the Houston Texans. And look, he may never coach a snap for the Texans, mm-hmm. but he's already done the Houston Texans a huge favor. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
They've got really good draft capital, really good draft capital.
Couple good young players.
They're in a division that you can at least look at and say, all right, Indy, Tennessee, Jacksonville is nothing. But you can at least, all right, how do we? So I think there's growth potential immediately there from their 2 or 3 wins that they had this year.
That's my favorite soundbite from Sean Payton on with the on the herd with Colin Cowherd yesterday. He basically said the division sucked, Blinkers. He had to catch himself. You know, you look at Tennessee, the Colts, the Jags. There's not. There's room for improvement. That was my favorite thing from Sean Payton. I don't care if he ever coaches a game for the Texans. He bashed the rest of the AFC South, and I thought it was hilarious.
He said a lot.
Yeah, he did. He really did.
You know, a lot of times the guys will like tiptoe around that kind of stuff and try and avoid, you know, specifics and addressing, you know, certain things, especially until it's established what job you're going to probably take or be, you know, a finalist for. But he basically said a lot and answered a lot of questions that we had, from the starting price and the asking price of Mickey Loomis and the Saints, to getting down to more so like the players on the roster currently for the Texans and like conversations that he needs to have with those players before he even gets the job, just so he knows and they don't have to have a tough conversation if he does get the job. He's definitely invested in all these opportunities, and he, at least for the short term, it seems like he's treating all of them with the same kind of attention to detail to figure out wherever he goes is going to be a place where he is going to have put a stamp on it. I like that from his standpoint.
Yeah, I think that Sean Payton did the Houston Texans a favor, and he might not even be the head coach of the Texans. I think he did a huge favor. I think he gave the Texans clout. Like, that's a very popular word in today's youth, right? Everybody's chasing clout. I think that the Texans won some clout yesterday with Sean Payton, and we've had a knockout dragouts, not us personally, but people that would be open to the idea of trading number 12 for Sean Payton. We don't want to trade number 12 for Sean Payton. But he immediately does bring clout to an organization when he's like, oh, yeah, I would be interested in that job. Absolutely. And he interviewed for the job. The Houston Texans later yesterday in the late afternoon, early evening, tweeted out like they have to that they – well, they don't have to tweet it, but they have to report it – that they interviewed Sean Payton. So if the Texans are out there interviewing somebody with the clout of Sean Payton, who many people think is the best head coach in this coaching carousel, has won a Super Bowl. I know that we mocked that he was 13 years ago, and Tom Coughlin has won a Super Bowl more recently than Sean Payton has. That's a fact. whenever he goes into that interview and he has the interview, whenever he sits down on national television and talks up the organization, all of a sudden the Texans go from what has been a laughingstock, a dumpster fire these last couple of years, to all of a sudden you look at the organization and Sean Payton's doing you a favor where you gained a lot of clout yesterday just because one head coach had an interview with you and went on national TV and said some good things about the organization.
Not only that, Jeremy, but you parlay that with the fact that you say, well, he is the biggest name, if not nothing else, in this cycle. And last time we did all of this, and unfortunately we did this less than a year ago, when we were doing all of this, it was evident that the Texans were the worst possible choice of all the teams. Now you look at all the teams that are looking for a coach, and you're looking for all the different drawbacks that each of those scenarios provide, and you say to yourself, in a year's time, as much as you totally screwed the entire, you know what, up by taking the guy you took and the guy previously, in a year's time, you've gone from the bottom of the barrel to almost, in my mind, the top of the list in terms of the most attractive job out there for coaches. And now when Payton does what he does, he only adds credibility to that by saying, look, this is a situation based on draft capital alone that I could actually work with, that I could do something with, that I could have input to put my stamp immediately on this team. And he likes what they did a year ago and some of the young players they brought in. So you look at that and say, hey, for all these coaches, young, old, and whoever is interviewing, it could do what you could be in a lot worse. You could be Denver. You could have little to no draft capital. You could have Russell Wilson just absolutely jammed down your throat for $160 million in multiple years of basically good luck trying to figure that out. You could have Kyler Murray and exactly what we said about how his immaturity, his lack of work ethic, all the different things that he brings to the table that no coach really wants to deal with when you're the head coach has such an intimate relationship with quarterbacks. You go up and down the list. Carolina's kind of been a mess. You look at it and say, look, yeah, the Colts are more ready to win right now and they just need a quarterback and they have the pick to possibly do that. But besides the Colts, Texans look like that is one of, you know, position A for coaches to land.
Yeah, let's listen to some of more of what Payton had to say yesterday. Because, again, I think he gave the Texans organization clout. I don't think that some people now are looking at the Texans in a different light than they looked at, I think, before Sean Payton said that. And definitely the day that they fired Lovie. Because I think the Texans have done a lot of good things since they fired Lovie. The coaching list is a solid one that people are taking seriously. Many people think Payton's the best coach in this coaching cycle. He's saying good things about the Texans and literally interviewed for the job. Here were some of the things that Payton told Colin Cowherd yesterday on why the Texans job's attractive.
I promise it's coming.
Are you sure that's the cut you want? We just played that, the perks of the Texans.
Okay, how about his relationship with Cal McNair?
Let's say it's a bad... Texans. It's a team that's got... They got to find a quarterback, probably. Are you willing to consider that if
absolutely.
You, okay, you
Here's
would.
Here's why. And look, I think I know the ownership group not very well, but we practiced against the Texans in New Orleans four or five different times. So Cal McNair, his late father, we'd see them, and so I don't know them well, but I know them. When you practice for 3 days with an opponent, you get a chance to meet a lot of the different personalities and people involved in the building.
Sean Payton yesterday. See, one of the fears that a lot of people have with this organization, Blankers, is ownership, right?
Yeah.
Cal McNair, we were talking about this the other day, that he literally should not speak behind an open microphone, and I think it'd be in the best interest of the organization. If he wants statements, written statements, post it on Twitter, send it out to the media, have them copy and paste it to their Twitter. Have it get out that way. If you need to do a little thing at the beginning of Lovie Smith where you read off of a one-page document, okay, that's the only time that he speaks. So we look at that, and we think of Cal as kind of a buffoon, which I don't know if that's fair. He certainly sounds like one. I don't know if he is one. Some people would push back and say that he is. But a lot of people, and there's the old saying, you can't escape bad ownership. If you have bad ownership, you'll never be able to win, which is something that I do agree with. But I think that Sean Payton, who would be willing to work with Cal McNair, I think dispels a lot of those concerns. Because if Sean Payton doesn't think Cal McNair is a buffoon, if Sean Payton's willing to work with an owner like Cal McNair, I think that a lot of the concerns of Cal McNair as an owner are gone.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, at a time when they were practicing against the Texans, I don't know if Robert McNair was still alive, but you know, you can say you get to know someone or you've met and you shake hands and you have small talk with everybody who's on the field, and the McNairs were normally on the field. Now, I don't know if that gives you time to break bread with them and really get any in-depth conversations, but at least the fact that you know his ownership style, you've seen it, you've understood what everybody has said, and you know that he's kind of a hands-off owner. If you can just reach some kind of common ground, which basically is, I've already known this guy. If I come in, and as part of the interview process, I'm sure it's discussed, but much like Bill O'Brien had it, but with maybe a little bit more on the communication side this time, say, hey, look, I'm going to stay out of your way if I'm Cal McNair. You've been there, done that, and you've had a ton of experience in this league. I trust you. If we hire you, you're going to be the guy. Just please, on big decisions and decisions where there might be ramifications in the media and with the fan base, let me know, because we're trying to resurrect an absolute horse bleep image that we've basically created for ourselves over the last 3 years. And I think that helps, as opposed to some young, brash, or you know, even a Harbaugh type who would come in and kind of guns blazing, kind of be domineering in the way he would say, look, I'm going to run this show, and you're going to stay out of the way, and I don't care how much money you make, and if you sign the checks, I've got to be able to do things my way. And if there's not that understanding and that common ground, it can get contentious real quick. I think that's why Peyton feels more comfortable in a situation where you've got an older ownership group that could basically say, hey, we're hiring you because we trust that you know what you're doing.
713-780-ESPN. You get a little bit more open to the idea of Sean Payton as the head coach of the Texans. 713-780-3776. The one hang-up that we have, Blankers, is the compensation.
Yes, we do.
Here was Sean Payton yesterday kind of clarifying what the compensation would be to acquire the services of Sean Payton.
I say this because I know Mickey well, and I heard him talk the other day, and he was right on, and I think I am too. He's got a job to do as a general manager with the Saints, and he'll get the right compensation, and I'm sure the team, if it gets that far, will arrive at it. And it's probably this year, it would probably be, you know, a mid to late first round pick, I would say.
713-780-ESPN. A little bit more open to that mid to late first round pick. 713-780-3776. Also, Blankers, I'm not making a 180. I'm not making a 180. Okay. I'm not walking back what I said the other day about Peyton. Mm-hmm. But I do have a scenario where I would hire Sean Payton. It's option number 5. I'm curious what you think. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Are you becoming a little more open to the idea? It's funny, Peyton talks some good things about you. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a little bit more open to the idea. I'm a little bit more open to it as well. He's option number 5. I'll tell you specifically, no blanket statements with the Killer Bees. I'll tell you specifically what I mean by that in just a moment. But let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Pena, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Pena?
Hey, what's up, guys? Real quick, before I get to what I want to talk about, I was watching some YouTube videos yesterday about UFC trash talking, and Chael Sonnen came along, and he said something. I was like, man, that's something Jeremy would say. You give me Chael Sonnen vibes, Jeremy. But so
not an appearance of toughness, just maybe in the statements.
I mean, I'm pretty ripped.
No, but
everything I say is very serious. Oh, I'm pretty yacked, you know.
Look,
Brandon beautification.
No, well, I don't know if you look like him, but you definitely give me
vibes. He doesn't.
But anyways, I am a little bit more for Sean Payton now that what he said, and he didn't even let Cowherd finish his sentence when he said, absolutely. Like, you know, I was for Benny Johnson, but what he's been saying, he seems like he's aware of the draft picks that the picks that the trade. I'm sorry, guys, I'm out of breath. I'm working right now. He's okay with the draft picks being traded to the Saints for him. And wasn't there a rumor saying that before you want to talk to Sean Payton, the Saints want to come up with a trade before you can talk to him?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the call, Ben. Go ahead. I guess you're not done.
One more thing. One thing I like more than Ben Johnson for Sean Payton is that he's been there and done that. And that's about it. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks,
appreciate
Pena.
Appreciate
the call, Pena. The trade for Pena, because a lot of people are talking about like what this would look like and who holds the advantage, who has the leverage, the Saints, the team that Peyton wants to go to. Peyton, this is not a trade negotiation. Like, let's go ahead and put that out there right now and in that entire conversation. This is very similar to the Deshaun Watson, quote, trade, where Nick Caserio laid out a price for Deshaun Watson. It didn't matter where they were in the draft. It's basically three first-rounders, two-thirds, right? This is the price of what it's going to cost for Deshaun Watson. If you're willing to pay that cost, all of a sudden you could come into the sweepstakes, and then Deshaun Watson's going to pick the teams that are in the sweepstakes. It's the same thing that's going on right now with Sean Payton. Mickey Loomis is going to these teams that are interested to enter the sweepstakes and saying it's going to cost at least a first-round draft pick. And Sean Payton clarified it. He said mid to late first-rounder, right? Right. So there you go. It's a mid to late first round draft pick that it's going to cost for Sean Payton. So you're going to have three, four, five teams, whatever it turns out, you know, being that enter the Sean Payton sweepstakes. And then Sean Payton's going to pick the team that he wants to go to with the trade already being known. Mm-hmm. So this is not a team holding leverage on another team. There's a price. If you're willing to pay the price, you can be in the sweepstakes for Sean Payton. And then Sean Payton's going to pick whichever team in the sweepstakes he likes best.
Yeah. And I think that, again, that's why I likened it to what Caserio was involved with and how he tried to structure the Deshaun Watson trade. And look, the Saints are going to play this thing, and they can use some of the best of Nick Caserio in that move to try and make it into their best advantage to get whatever they can out of this deal. I think personally, the minute that he said what we were already saying, which some people scoffed at, which was the starting point's a first round pick. And he verified that middle to late round first round pick. So I think 12 is still too high. And so if you truly start getting enamored with Sean Payton, because I'm with you and we've been on the same page since day one, Ben Johnson was our first choice. And then we can go ahead and I know we're going to get into like structuring our wish list. But to me, it's not right in terms of the timing for both sides. Sean Payton wants to win right away. And Sean Payton, with his legacy and like you had highlighted how long it's been since he's actually won a Super Bowl and really competed, that, you know, he wants to win immediately to kind of restart his legacy. I don't think the Texans are ready to do that for the next couple of years, and I think the Texans need a coach they can grow with, a younger, more forward-thinking, more kind of new NFL kind of bloodlines coming into a situation where with all these draft picks and all the things that they can do, that they can kind of work in unison. Sean Payton's going to want to win now. He's probably going to want to dabble in free agency and get a lot of veterans earlier than Caserio probably would like to. I think he's a hell of a name. I think, like you said, it's really attractive and sexy that he kind of put the Texans back on the map as a legit candidate, but I don't think it's the right time for either side.
713-780-ESPN, a little more open to the idea of Sean Payton, 713-780-3776. Here's where I stand on this, Blankers. I'm going to – this is the option I'm going to present to you. There is a scenario out there that exists – well, I would be willing to take Sean Payton on as the head coach for the Houston Texans and give some draft pick compensation. The draft pick compensation that has been reported. The draft pick compensation that Sean Payton says needs to be sent to acquire the services of said Sean Payton. If I miss out on my first five candidates, or my first four candidates, rather, he would be that fifth option. We all know that the Killer Bees are very much an advocate for Benny Johnson. We would love Benny Johnson to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. But if you swing and miss there, okay, well who's next? For me, it's D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans is my second option. Even though I prefer offensive guy, D'Amico Ryans would be my second option because you know he's leading a great defense. Now, a defense that does have a lot of great players and a defense that was succeeding even before D'Amico Ryans was the DC. I think that is important to note. But I think D'Amico Ryans has a chance to be a really good head coach in the NFL. Questions I would have with D'Amico, who you bringing in as your OC? Is your OC going to be around long enough to groom a franchise quarterback? Should you go that route in the first round? But let's say D'Amico says no. Okay, we'll move on to the third option on my list. For me, it's currently Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator for the Eagles. I think he's done some good things there. Concerns that I have is do I know for sure that he is the offensive mind and the offensive genius in that organization? Because he's an OC under an offensive head coach in Sirianni. So that's my concern there, but Steichen's my third option. And then Kafka's my fourth option. Kafka, still same concerns that I have for Steichen, is that he is an OC under an offensive-minded head coach. In Brian Daboll. Now, both of those guys are calling plays. what's the game planning looking like during the week? How much is Kafka and Steichen game planning versus the head coach game plan? We don't know. We're not in that building. We'd have to, you know, be in the building to really have an idea for that. But those are my top four: Benny, D'Amico, Steichen, Kafka. If I miss on all of those guys, Blankers, I'm willing to give the Cleveland Browns 2024 first-round pick for Sean Payton, because I don't want Jonathan Gannon. I don't want Thomas Brown.
Did you see
I
the
don't
Vegas
want Evero.
Yesterday?
For who?
For the Texans.
For the head coach?
Yeah, the leading candidate right now is Gannon.
See, that would I don't
that
want
scares
that.
The hell out like, of me. I don't rather, want him either.
I would rather trade Cleveland's first and 24 than Jonathan Gannon.
See, to me, I kept thinking about this after he said what he said to Cowherd, and I thought, okay, well, then how about the second pick of the second round? Can we get to that level? Because Denver, we don't know what they're going to be able to drum up to be able to put on the table, and they're probably going to want a guy that wins now, that has a name, that makes people forget about Nathaniel Hackett. They're going to be in the mix for sure. Carolina is supposed to be the leader right now for Ben Johnson. So when you start looking at just – and Vegas normally knows more than we do with whatever intel they get. It's just weird. And the odds changed. Gannon went to the top of the list. I don't want Gannon, and that's why I agree with you. He wouldn't be in my top four or five either. But if the conversation about Sean Payton could be coerced into going to that second pick of the second round, then I'd be interested. I just don't want to give up 12, and I just think you're going to get too good of a player that can make too good of an impact right away. And especially when we talk about scenarios where you could possibly take a quarterback and a wide receiver and really jumpstart your entire offense, I just don't – I think that's too much. And even for him to say mid to late first as a starting point, I don't think you have to go much high. You don't have to go higher. You can try and go lower. You might want – and again, I don't want to trade 12, move down to get the pick they want. But you're because you're still losing a more impactful player.
How about Cleveland's 24th? The Cleveland first rounder in 2024.
I'd be fine with that.
Because I don't want anything to do with Jonathan Gannon.
I don't want either.
Thomas Brown. I don't want to. That would feel like a disappointment. Like, you fire Lovey. Jonathan Gannon was far on the list last year. Everybody has high hopes that this coaching hire is going to be the coaching hire that gets the organization back on track. That the play, because coaching matters so much, right? I mean, everybody telling us that after the wild card round of the playoffs, how important coaching is. Like, it's some sort of foreign thought that no one's ever thought before. Oh yeah, coaching matters. Yeah, no crap. Yeah, coaching matters a lot, especially in the NFL. But if I miss on all four of those guys, those four that are at the top of my list, Ben Johnson, D'Amico Ryan, Shane Steichen, Mike Kafka, anybody else not named Sean Payton, and I understand there's a first rounder at risk here and at stakes, would feel like a disappointment to me.
Jeremy, let me ask you a question, because I'm with you, because you know I've said all along, I want an offensive-minded head coach with an offensive-minded offensive coordinator from that offensive-minded head coach that he already knows, so that you can really groom whatever quarterback you get. The thing that scares me the most, because the only defensive guy that I would even consider is D'Amico, because he's been here. He was a player. People like him. He's a hot name for a reason. He's coming out of the Shanahan tree. He's interviewing all over the place because people know between his enthusiasm, his ability to lead, and the way he's been able to take, obviously, a ton of talent and you know, keep that defense doing what they're doing, he makes a lot of sense. But if he says, my offensive coordinator is going to be LaFleur's little brother, that would scare the hell out of me. Because whether it's a scapegoat move or not, he took the blame for Zach Wilson. He obviously didn't do what was necessary to kind of develop Zach Wilson as a franchise quarterback. Coming off of that, he might be a little gun-shy too. I don't know that I want that guy working with my new quarterback the way he did with Zach Wilson. I might want a guy that can basically come in from the get-go and groom the kid the way and not be looking over his shoulder. That would worry me a little bit.
Yeah, I can understand why that would worry you. Seven, and that's why I like the Kubiak model there.
Because they said LaFleur's little brother, that he has been... The minute the Jets let him go, there were four or five teams knocking on his door that are interested. And I get it, because he, again, comes from the Shanahan tree, and his brother's been very successful in Green Bay, and he knows the more modern-day NFL offenses. But I think he's more ready for a quarterback that's either a game manager or has a little bit more skins on the wall and time under their belt than it would be to take a franchise quarterback right out of college and say, I know what it takes to get this kid to the next level.
Yeah, he didn't do great with Zach, right?
Nope.
Like, he didn't do great with Zach Wilson, but how much of, like, I could, like, and I don't disagree with you. I'm playing devil's advocate for the heck of it here. I could push back and say, well, it's Zach Wilson. He was terrible. He was going to be awful no matter who his offensive coordinator was, right? And if you get the best quarterback in this draft, which is Will Levis, maybe that's a different story, right? I mean, we don't know. We don't know how much of the influence is Wilson. And the other thing I would say about like a positive for LaFleur is if you have four or five other teams like hammering down his door saying, we want you back in our organization, that's probably a good sign.
It's a good sign.
Because I don't think many people are hammering down the door of, let's say, Joe Lombardi, who got fired today.
Right, today. But here's the thing. The other thing that would be, and you can, again, just for the sake of discussion, if you are LaFleur's little brother and you worked with the San Francisco situation, and the way that you have success in San Francisco is everybody but the guy that you spent all the draft capital to trade up and get in Trey Lance, then you haven't developed him very well either. And then he got hurt, but for all we've heard was he was kind of falling behind the curve in terms of picking up the offense and audibles and the progressions and all the different things that you got to do to be an NFL quarterback. That's why he didn't get to the field sooner. That would give me a little bit more apprehension to say, well, then were you guys so focused on the win now mentality you didn't spend enough time with the biggest investment you made as a franchise? That would concern me if the Texans are ready to take a quarterback like that.
713-780-ESPN. A little more open to the idea of Peyton as the head coach of the Texans. Also, some more what Peyton had to say to Colin Cowherd yesterday. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
More open to the idea, Sean Payton as the head coach of the Houston Texans. 3726, would it be possible to get Payton by just signing a big check to the Saints, say $100 million, kind of like a transfer fee in soccer? No. They want a first-round draft pick. Loomis was even talking to the media the other day, basically saying it's going to cost a first. A lot of reporters said it'd be a first plus. Sean Payton said a mid to late first. Like, what is telling you it's not going to be a first-round pick? I don't think that you can, like, have this conversation about Sean Payton without it including a first. And I can understand why you're doing it, why people, not you, specifically bankers, you generally speaking, people were wanting to talk it down because they like the idea of Sean Payton, but they don't like the idea of adding the compensation of a first-round pick. So, like, oh, okay, what about a bunch of money? Oh, okay, what about a second or a third? No, you can't have the Sean Payton conversation unless you're talking about a first-round pick attached to Sean Payton.
No, you're right. And again, competition is going to drive up the price, I think, inevitably. So we can sit there till we're blue in the face.
I don't think so. I think the price is the price. I think the price is already set, and nothing else is going to drive it up. It's a mid to late first round draft pick. If you have one, okay, you can be in the.
You don't think it's going to be
it
more?
It might involve a package, but it's already there. What I'm saying, it's not going to grow. Like, there's no negotiation here. It's not going to be like, okay, Sean Payton telling Mickey Loomis, I'll be happy to go to Arizona, and I'll be happy to go to Houston.
Right.
You take whichever team gives you the most, because why would Sean Payton do that?
Well,
the price is the price.
Right, but Sean Payton tells you everything that you just said, right? And then Mickey Loomis calls both teams. And again, the scenarios are going to be different because what they have in their asset drawer is going to be different. We know that Denver's more depleted. So Denver might be more laden with multiple picks, but not to the same substance that the Texans could bring to the table. And then he's going to say, hey, look, he said it's between you and another team. This is the best offer that I've gotten so far. You've got to at least match this, or we're going the other direction. I think Mickey Loomis, as much as he knows and he's going to do a solid to Sean Payton after Sean Payton does the solid of telling him these are the two teams I'd like to go to, but I don't think anything's going to stop him from trying to raise the stakes as much as he can to get as much as he can out of it. And I think that he will get more of a package out of one team than the others, and he will use the competition.
7-1, yeah, I just don't know if it can grow. I really don't know if it's going to grow more than it already is. There's reports out there, I think Loomis even said this during his press conference with reporters, that for a team to be involved, that they have to agree to a trade package before the conversations even happen. So I think that a trade has been done, technically speaking, with every team that's interested in hiring Sean Payton. I think the Texans have already have their package to New Orleans. All of these other teams that are going to interview Sean Payton, whether it's Carolina, whether it's Arizona, I don't know if Indy's going to get an interview or not. All of these teams already have that trade to New Orleans, and then whenever the team and Sean Payton agree to terms, then that trade becomes official. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. One more thing before we go to the callers. Gary and Thomas are on the line about, like, I've heard a lot of people, too, say, well, you know, Sean Payton's enticed to these jobs because of A, B, and C. He's enticed to the Texans job because of salary cap, draft picks, young players. And some people are pushing back at that, saying, well, doesn't the Texans' job immediately become a little bit less enticing if you're having to include number 12 to go get Sean Payton? The answer to that is yes, but the answer to that is also every team has to do it. So if it's Arizona, well, they're giving away a first. If it's Denver, well, they're giving away a first. If it's Carolina, well, they're giving away a first. So, like, for Sean Payton, it's not any different. All of these teams are giving away a first-rounder. So that doesn't Does it lower the enticement of all the like of the Texans? Yes, but I would say it lowers the enticement to the Texans equal to all of the other teams that are also in the sweepstakes because the cost is the cost.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's what it's weird in such a way because the Texans are involved in this with Sean Payton, but it's really like the template was created by Nick Caserio to some degree, and now it might be and now maybe used against them or to some degree again. Use so that they can so that the Saints can maximize it this time. But look, they're not idiots for following because that's why I gave Caserio so much credit for being able to orchestrate a no-win situation into at least being able to control as much as you can control. The Saints are going to do what they're going to do. I just think that at a certain point, it's going to come down to maybe two teams. And Mickey Loomis wouldn't be doing his job if he didn't say, hey, look, there's two teams in the mix. This team's offering us this and this and this, and they're willing to go more. At a certain point, you just say, what's the max? And that's why the package could change. Like, he could end up getting more because of the fact that there's competition. So, again, that's why you and I are on the same page. I don't think he's the right fit for this franchise right now. If this team was closer to being a playoff contender or a team that makes the playoffs and could possibly go further, then I could say this would be a good match. But I don't think it's the right match. But we already said for the starting point of saying you have to give up compensation just to get a coach when all these other coaches don't cost you a thing except for a salary, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly understand that. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just want to say I don't actually think Sean Payton coming to the Texans is a possibility. I will place the chances at, like, 2%. Just like Joel said, like, we're too far away. Like, why would you leave the Saints because they're not a contender to come to a team that's even less of a contender? I mean, best case scenario, we get a rookie quarterback, a couple free agents, like 2-3 years at the minimum, we're a contender. Also, I follow this dude on Twitter, Benjamin Albright, not saying he's like gospel or anything, but according to his sources, like, the actual interest isn't sincere. And I kind of feel like we're doing each other like a mutual solid. Like, Sean Payton's kind of adding some legitimacy to our coaching search, and I think we're adding him some leverage, you know, to his team search. But I just don't think it's going to happen. We're going to get a young up-and-comer that can grow with the team. There's no point in, you know, that just makes more sense. He's not coming here. I just can't see the scenario where it happens.
Appreciate the call, Gary. And for the most part, I think you're right, because to me, he's option five. Sean Payton's option five. And if Sean Payton's option five, are the Texans using Sean Payton for some clout? Is Sean Payton using the Texans for a little bit of bargaining power with these other teams? I think that that's probably likely. But the market's getting dried up a little bit too, right, though? Because who were like a couple of teams that were kind of rumored to be destinations that Sean Payton had, you know, was looking at from the corner of his eye? The Chargers, and the Chargers had every reason to fire Brandon Staley, yep. And they did not. So there's one team that Sean Payton reportedly wanted to go to that did not come open. The Rams, too, because of his connection with L.A. McVay's coming back. And the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think you're moving on from Mike McCarthy now. After Mike McCarthy won yesterday, it becomes more difficult to do so. Do I think that's necessarily the right thing? Like, if I'm Jerry Jones and I could add Sean Payton as opposed to Mike McCarthy, I'm probably going after Sean Payton no matter how far the Cowboys go in the playoffs. Same thing that Jim Crane did with James Click. He didn't feel that Click was the best, like his best GM, so he fired him even after he won the World Series.
Look,
if Jerry Jones thinks that Payton's better than McCarthy, why shouldn't he fire him even if they go to the NFC Championship?
It's your team, and one of the things that you have full capability of doing and the right to do when you own the team, no matter how much people might think that, you know, for whatever the reason, they don't agree with it and don't like it, is you can hire and fire whenever you want. And if you're going to own this team and you're as hands-on as Jerry Jones, and you know that, hey, at the time, Sean Payton wasn't available. McCarthy's coming off of what he did in Green Bay, regardless of whether it was him or Rodgers or both. I can get a big-name coach at a time when I really need a bigger name, someone that's going to draw everyone's attention, because I like to do that with the Cowboys anyway, and he got McCarthy. But knowing all the things we knew about McCarthy coming into this season, now he's righted a lot of those wrongs. Even last night, a team that was penalty-laden throughout their existence under Mike McCarthy only had two penalties last night. They're doing things a lot better, a lot differently. They're managing the clock better and making a lot of improvements. But more so than anything else, they won a game last night in the playoffs, which they haven't been able to do in forever and a day. So there's progress being made all across the board, and he's also still paying him. And we know, I've said, owners don't like paying free money. To where it looks like there's enough there, enough meat on the bone for him to say, now I'm probably not going to make a change. Because if you go and lose last night's game, do you know who that they were the team that had the most wins over the last 2 years in the NFC? It wasn't the Niners, wasn't the Packers, wasn't the Rams, wasn't all these teams at the top. 24 wins in the regular season for the Cowboys over the last 2 years. If they'd have been bounced in the playoffs in the opening round, in the wild card round in those 2 years, that would have been an embarrassment. But because they won last night and Dak looked good, and the defense looked better than good, it now gives you hope as a franchise, so you're not going to make that change. The Chargers, to me, was the no-brainer. Like, Staley already was on the hot seat. People were saying that if they didn't make some kind of a run, he was going to be gone. Then he basically was the reason in a lot of ways that they were gone. I mean, first, he plays one of his best players at Mike Williams when he didn't have to, and he gets hurt in a meaningless game and can't help you. Then you blow that type lead because you go and get hyper-conservative and try to sit on it instead of being as aggressive as you were to keep doing what you were doing to get the lead that you had. And you walk away tail between your legs, shaking your head, going, what the hell was that? Well, if I'm the owner and it's my choice, I've seen enough over the last 2 years alone and all the go for it in your own territory and all this other stuff to say, look, Sean Payton would make great sense to take Justin Herbert to the next level. I got unbelievable veterans all across the board that can help me. On both sides of the ball, this team's ready to win. Sean Payton would be the perfect solution, and I would have made that move already.
713-780-ESPN. Are you more open to the idea of Payton as the Texans head coach? And you don't have this conversation unless you're giving away a first. A lot of people say, what can you pay him? Can you give him a two-thirds? Can you give a second? Can you give your first second rounder this year? No. Don't entertain this conversation unless it includes a first-rounder. The least we'll be willing to go is Cleveland's 24 first-rounder. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.